This is Wine and Dine in LA with Anush, where I talk about wine in a fun and approachable way and bring you all insights of the world of wine.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year. Merry Christmas. Happy All Holidays. Welcome back, everyone. Welcome to the new 2021, the first episode on Wine and Dine in LA with Anush, where I bring you interesting and exciting stories about wine and food industry. I am sure you're going to love today's episode. Pour yourself a glass of wine and sit in a nice, cozy place with a blanket, maybe, because today we are going to learn maybe how to make a charcuterie board, something that has become so popular, such a cool thing to do. And I know some of the DIYers, do-it-yourself people, would like to learn and get like a little tips on how to do it. But not only that, we're also going to hear story of Gareno, who is owner and private chef of the Chacrut and Carino's Kitchen. We're going to find out, what does it take to become a private chef? Is it fun? Is it scary? All sorts of things here and there in between. So without further ado, let me welcome Gareno. Welcome to our first episode of 2021.
Hi, hello, Anushan. I'm very excited to be on the first episode. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. I am very excited to learn about what you do, how you arrived to doing what you are doing, because I'm pretty sure there is a very interesting story, background, what you did before from what you are doing right now. But I love to start my interviews by learning about my guests' roots, their heritage. Where do they come from? How does your background affect you, what you do right now? So I know it's a lengthy question, but we can start from where are you from?
Of course. So I was born in Vanadzor, Armenia. I moved to the States when I was 13 years old with my dad. So ever since I was younger, I would always watch my mom and my grandmas cook in the house. So, you know, their cooking was a staple. Of course, in every one of our, you know, regular or event-related, you know, places where they cooked a lot. So you kind of followed the things. And also because my grandparents had a huge, you know, land, they used to grow their own vegetables and their fruits. So I kind of grew up around that, always harvesting things fresh and even planting myself and learning how to go around the farm by myself. So that has been kind of the beginning of what I remember as a kid, but I never thought I'm going to end up here because my journey kind of took a thing of its own. After graduating high school here, I went to college to study film and media because for some reason I thought I was going to be a screenwriter and a producer because I love writing. And then, you know, but after graduating, I ended up working at the bank and all through college. So I did about, you know, 14 years of that. And then as I was doing that, I was like, you know what, I need to do something else. So project management was like right up my alley. So I did my master's degree in project management. And then I was like, okay, like I have all these things, but I've never done actually anything that I've learned. So I was kind of, you know, my interpersonal growth had kind of stopped. So I decided to just take a year off from work and travel the world. And that was the beginning of finding food and cooking, of how it kind of happened.
Mm-hmm. That is amazing. So, let me take you back a little bit to going back to Vanadzor. Is Vanadzor considered one of the best places for cheese making?
For
farms, for nice cows. Because the reason I'm asking is that while I was in Armenia, I worked as an interpreter while I was going through the agricultural school, and one of the projects was to interpret for a Danish company who came into Armenia to establish like a small pilot project, which was a state of an art. Where the cows are. And then making also a state-of-the-art cheese plant because the potential of cheese making there was so good.
Honestly, I'm not sure, but I kind of grew up making cheese with my grandmother. So, like, we used to make, you know, cheese bunnies together, which was, and some butter, like, you know, churning the butter. And so I kind of grew up with doing all that. So it was always great to kind of eat your own made cheese. When you grow up around that, you kind of become biased about what you want to eat, what kind of cheeses you want to pick from. But you know, cheese has always been a big staple on our table, especially, you know, you got the bread and the cheese, and then you just add like a little bit of something else, like a watermelon to it or some walnuts. And it's like a literally a whole lunch menu right there in one sandwich.
Oh, so good. I just can envision, you know, the green land, the green mountains, you know, having a picnic, you know, with the cheese, I can smell it, you know, all the herbs and veggies and the bread, lavash, yum. Anyway, I think we can just talk about that for a long time, but let's go on with the story. Yeah.
Of course. Sorry, go ahead.
No, sometimes when you record over the phone, it's, you talk over each other, but it's okay.
Yeah, so I was just kind of saying how after I decided to take time off from banking, I took a year off to do some travel and, you know, visiting South Africa, Zimbabwe, and then I traveled to Australia and New Zealand and came back and did like several countries in Europe. So you kind of get a taste of every country as you travel. And me, being a food lover, I decided to take cooking classes as I was visiting those countries. So the whole me becoming a private chef kind of came from that, me learning and wanting to pass on everything that I've learned to other people to put smiles on their faces. It all started there.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you this question. Typically, like when you get inspired with the food, not saying anything about the other countries, but people when they get inspired about the food, the first thing they want to do is to go to Italy, you know, France, those countries. Why did you decide to go to Africa? What was attracting you, the spices or their cooking techniques that you were curious about?
Honestly, I didn't go there particularly for food. I wanted to see the largest waterfall in Zimbabwe, which is Victoria Falls. It stretches like 1 mile long. So on my way, I was like, everybody just kept on telling me, you got to go to Cape Town, you got to go to Johannesburg. So it was kind of crazy because I've reached out. I found this group on Facebook. It's called South African Armenians. And I reached out and then there were like people there. And when I went there, they greeted me. We went out, we had food together. It was kind of crazy to find Armenians like, you know, on the other side of the world.
That's crazy.
When I got there, right? So I was not expecting that. I just kind of like randomly searched. I was like, what if there are Armenians in Africa? Wouldn't it be cool? They're like, you know, African Armenians. And, you know, so when I was visiting Johannesburg, we ended up going, you know, I got to hang out. I saw their businesses. It was just such an amazing experience. And then, you know, same thing. And then when I was coming back, I made a stop in Barcelona. So the African Armenians introduced me to Spanish Armenians. So I went there. I went to an Armenian school and saw the kids. It was just an incredible experience just to see other Armenians and, you know, having food with them and just enjoying the whole process. It wasn't necessarily I went there, but when I was there, that's when I discovered the spices and, you know, different variations of harissa spice, which is like, you know, Moroccan is very different from South African. So I kind of picked up little things here and there. And then when I took classes, you know, learning how to make white fish and just flavor it the African way, it was just such an amazing experience that I was like, okay, I need to take this and I need to apply it. So I brought it home and I was like, okay, like, you know, maybe we can add this to like chicken or fish or make an Armenian style sushi with those spices, you know, just kind of like out of this world fusion dishes that I never thought would be possible. But, you know, the more I experimented, the more results I got that were like super flavorful. So every time when I cook, I always try to try something different and new, which is where the idea of the writing my own cookbook came across. But we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's incredible it's wonderful to know that there's Armenians all over the world, but we also know the reason why that is, which is sad. But at the same time, you know, right now you go to Africa, you can meet Armenian community, you can interact with them, you can see. Did you see, what kind of industry, like going a little bit off the topic, I'm curious to know, like, what sure. kind of industry those Armenians were? Were they in agriculture, were in food, or they were like in other, or did you not get to find out what they do?
Well, they had restaurants, they were in the precious stone industries like diamond and gold, and that was at least the people that I met, they were in those industries and also tech industry. So
but restaurants, so food still is a big thing, big part.
It is. I didn't go to their restaurant per se because it was another city, but I kind of found out that they operate, you know, within a large industry that where they can basically bring their own home country's food to, you know, show off to other nation and just kind of create fusion dishes over there as well.
Interesting, amazing. I would love just briefly, because there's so much to talk about. So what about your Australian experience? I know that there's a large Armenian community over there too, but did you get to meet them? Did you get to go into the wine, into taste some wines and wineries? Are there any Armenians in the wineries there?
I didn't get a chance to meet Armenians in the winery in the winery area, but when we were in New Zealand, we tried a lot of their wines. Well, Sauvignon Blanc is one of my favorite wines, especially harvested in New Zealand. So I brought, like, had them ship a lot of bottles over. So when I arrived, yeah. I had, like, boxes and boxes of wines, and it was just really, really cool.
I love New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc and New Zealand Pinot Noir. One of my goals is to go there, but we need to get back to our conversation. There's so many different ways to go. so you came back after that amazing experience, and you said, okay, now I'm going to channel all my love, all my passion, all my experiences into becoming a chef.
Yes. So having learned all that and collecting all that information, and then, I watched a lot of videos on YouTube, how to prepare stuff, you know, watching Gordon Ramsay and Jamie Oliver and just being inspired by them, of their creations, you kind of start taking what they're really good at and applying to what you're good at, because some of the Armenian spices are very different when you use them. Like, let's say if you buy thyme over here versus use an Armenian one, there is a different potency level that you feel, like a drastic difference. So I still to this day ask my grandfather to ship me some spices from Armenia directly just so I can use them, especially the basil and the savory are my favorite from there. So up to this day, I'm still being influenced by Armenian spices and just adding it and presenting it to people.
The savory is Kidron. Is that Kidron?
Yes, it is.
You know, I interviewed a couple of shows back Peter, who is the owner of the spice station, and he also made a very strong emphasis that when he does, for example, he says this is a Indian spice blend, he makes sure that all the spices are from India, because just like what you have said, different spices from different countries have different potencies. And so, for example, the oregano in Mexican oregano versus the oregano of Italy, you know, they taste different. And to the point that what you just mentioned, that you still ask for the spices to be brought from Armenia to keep that authentic. Because, yes, like when you make dolma, you know, my grandma always added gidron savory to it. And savory doesn't taste the same over here. It's a totally different totally different smell, totally different taste.
I totally agree.
I don't know. I'd love to for us to talk about the cheese boards when we come back. But before we leave for our break, how challenging is it to be a private chef, and how rewarding it is to be a private chef?
So, you know, the first challenge was because I didn't have a formal training. I kind of had to learn everything from scratch and just opening myself up to learning the way different people did instead of just like from one instructor, which, you know, taught everything in a single manner. I think that was the first challenge. But once you overcome that and you allow yourself to make mistakes, then it allows you to have a drastic growth, where you realize how experimenting with food can turn into something really beautiful. So if you make a certain dish traditionally this way, I would always add something else just to kind of test out to see what it would bring. So let's say if you're making like poached pears or something, adding something savory to it and a little bit sweetness to it at the same time can create a unique blend, or adding some kind of caramel on top can bring another dimension to it. So that was the first challenge, to kind of figure that out. Second one is really going out there and just establishing yourself as a person who loves to cook and, you know, presenting your products on your marketing channels, whether it be Instagram or Facebook or, you know, word of mouth, and just kind of putting yourself out there and people hiring you and figuring out what you do and how you do it. Because a lot of times people are just like, okay, I want to order this, 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 this. And then you kind of have to go back and be like, okay, well, a lot of questions. Do you have any dietary restrictions? Are there any foods that you dislike? And then based on that, you cook. And what kind of salt levels do you prefer? Like, all those things are things that you kind of keep pick up as you go. So I think that was quite a bit of a challenge in the beginning to be able to customize. But now a good chunk of my clients are those who have specific dietary needs, so such as gluten-free diet or low-sodium diet or keto diet, right? So people want these types of foods prepared for their dinners. And I don't do much of meal prep, although I get a lot of requests, but I do get, you know, pre-COVID, my focus was primarily on events. So I would do that then, and, you know, people would be very happy with the food, and just like watching them put a smile on their faces was truly a moment where you just appreciate that when your food makes somebody happy. But yeah, just being
it's amazing.
Yourself and advertising yourself is probably the hardest part of the business, because it's so easy to fall off the wagon, because when you're not consistent, it could truly turn around to be something that you can easily give up on. Because you could be an artist, but unless as an artist you sell, there's no money, you can't really do much about it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very hard. It looks very glamorous, looks super fun, but I'm sure it's very difficult, and it takes a lot of discipline. It takes a lot of organization. It takes a huge amount of planning to do that. So wonderful. Well, it's about for us to take a short break, but after the break, we'd love to hear all about your other business, the Chucroot, and maybe you can give us a little bit of insight how to make our own board to entertain our friends. But for those who don't want to do it, they can always reach out to you. So we'll be back.
Absolutely.